Hello, this is the RTE Rugby World Cup podcast. We're on our pre-Samoa mode. So we've got the news from the team and we've got the news about the typhoon. First, let's hear from Conor Murray.
Yeah, everyone's aware of it and it's a bit of a weird one. I've never come across that before, but you know, the safety of players and fans alike, I think, is paramount in the World Rugby have made that decision. So, yeah, people are aware, but in terms of our preparation, it looks like we're going to miss the bulk of it and get to play, which is really exciting. Like we were chatting about, we've had a bit of a break now, and I think lads are really eager to get out there and play what's going to be a really combative game against Samoa, who are going to be really tricky.
Conor, you have a pretty amazing job, but if there is a downside to it, I suppose it's that everybody feels that they know the answer. Everybody has an opinion. And I suppose with social media and it being such a big part of everybody's lives these days, is it difficult to isolate yourself from that external criticism?
Yeah, I honestly find it is pretty easy to isolate yourself from it. I don't see it. I'm sure I speak for the majority of the squad. We don't see it, and I think we're better off not seeing it. You can get an idea of the mood when you do media, or you know, you're chatting to a family member or a friend. You know, just things that they might have heard, and you know, it's easy to switch off. I don't find it. I think it's only bad for you if you look it up, whether things are going well or whether things are a little bit off, which you know. Can be the case sometimes. You know, it's better off just to stay away from it. It comes harder and harder with so many social media platforms to steer clear of it. You come across it the odd time, but it is what it is. People are entitled to their opinions, and honestly what matters most is what happens inside our four walls. You know, what we say to each other, how we train, how we feel we're going, how far off it, how we feel like when we play well. So yeah, it's just part and parcel of the game nowadays, but I don't think, you know, the squad or management get bogged down by it. If you start listening to people outside, the people that actually matter and the people that you want to impress, then it's just wasted energy, I feel.
Conor, your third World Cup, and players say that the longer you play, the more you really want to savour and enjoy these experiences. Mm. How's it been for you? What have you made of Japan?
Loving it, absolutely loving it. It's been an incredible journey so far. Like you say, the more you play, the more you've been around, the more you cherish it. And that's kind of part of this weekend in terms of the excitement and the buzz and just wanting to get out and play and put in a performance. They're really special times. Like I said, the number of Irish people coming over is increasing. You can feel it a little bit around the city now. And you know, you don't know how many times you're going to get to do this. So every time you do, or the more times you get to do it, you save it a little bit more, and that's definitely part of the motivation going out there on Saturday.
Final quick point, in the event you get through to the quarterfinals, do you feel for this Ireland team it's all still on?
Absolutely, yeah. Don't need to develop it too much. I know how good this team can be when we're on song, and you know, again, keep going back to that excitement. That's part of it too. I know how, and we know how good this team can be when we're switched on, and you know, hopefully we get there.
Okay, that was Conor Murray. In studio, Wes Liddy and Michael Glennon, and on the phone, Bernard Jackman. But first, we're going to talk to Donal, Donal Lennon, who is in Japan. Donal, whereabouts are you this morning?
Hi, Dara. I'm in Yamaguchi at the moment on my way to Fukuoka. Now, thankfully, the weather here is fantastic, about 24 degrees this afternoon. So we've been spared the impact of the impending storm. Obviously, the news that two games have been postponed is huge out here, but at least Ireland's game goes ahead on Saturday as planned.
Tell me, because you have, I suppose, experience in the boardrooms of rugby as well as the playing fields, how was this communicated to the unions, and do you think all unions, i.e. Italian Union, New Zealand Union, and the French and English unions are happy enough with it?
Well, what happens, Dara, when you go into a World Cup, you sign up a participation agreement. World Rugby have come out already and said that all the participants were aware in advance that, you know, if this possibility arose, they had all signed up to 2 points for a draw and you move on. But, I mean, that's all fine in theory. Certainly Scotland are up in arms at the moment. Gregor Townsend has called a press conference for this afternoon, an unscheduled press conference, and I have no doubt he will use that platform to say that, look, Scotland's game has to go ahead If it has to be shifted, so be it. But there has to be contingency plans in terms of the game being played elsewhere. So there's an interesting battle building up already. Like the implications in some of the other pools haven't been quite as stark, given that, say, New Zealand and South Africa were certainly going to top their pools already. France and England had already qualified. And now there's only a question of who would finish in first and second place. But for Ireland, Japan and Scotland, the implications are huge. So it's a big news story. It is the nightmare scenario, I would imagine, for World Rugby. They've avoided the bullet a couple of times over the past few weeks, as we know. Ireland's game was threatened, but the storm took a different pathway and that threat passed. But I think it couldn't have hit a worse place, in that you have Yokohama and Tokyo are about 45 minutes from each other, and you have a number of games scheduled there for the weekend. So it's pardon the pun, it's the perfect storm.
That press conference actually took place already with Gregor Townsend, and he says, we have to believe and have faith in the organisers that the game will be played, even if it's behind closed doors or at a different venue.
There you go. Yeah, the different venue is the only option. Now, there's probably no obligation on World Rugby because of the participation agreement, which you rightly pointed out and brought to our attention. But I would imagine that there could be, I don't know, I mean, the behind closed doors one is interesting, because the argument that you get against rescheduling is often a public safety one. If it's behind closed doors, that eliminates that. But we're just speculating. I don't know, has anybody got anything to add? Good morning, Wes.
How are you?
Well, actually, Sergio Parise was on this morning, and you know, we were talking about Donald, the agreement that's made and everyone signs up to it. He's of the opinion now that if New Zealand had have needed 4 or 5 points, the game would have been played.
It's a difficult one. I mean, I think it certainly, safety has to be, obviously has to be the paramount thing here. But look, it'll raise all kinds of questions afterwards in relation to why Japan was picked, given that it's in the typhoon season. There'll be questions about when the quarterfinals comes around. The fact, let's say England and France, had they played each other, there's the possibility they could have picked up injuries. It means that they now have a rest. They've only played 3 pool matches in the pool stages, where their opposition had to play 4. So you're going to have all kinds of ramifications. And look, it's all very well signing participation agreements and all that in advance. I mean, look at it the other way. If our pool game was being cancelled in Fukuoka on Saturday, and we were being eliminated from the World Cup because Japan and Scotland went ahead on the Sunday, I don't think, you know, we'd be too happy about it either. And that's the proof of the pudding.
Well, it is the gentleman's game, so I presume the Japanese rugby union and the Scottish one will come to some arrangement to play that game.
But it's a difficult one, Dara, because you have, like, you've, I don't know how many thousand, you've 50,000 tickets sold. You see, they're waiting on until Sunday morning to see what the impact of the damage is. And, you know, that leaves it too late to reschedule it on, for another venue on the Sunday. Then if you're talking about playing on the Monday, you have one day less to prepare for your quarter final the following week. So you see, there is apparently a contingency that if this were to happen in the knockout phase, let's say it was the quarter finals, that they have a window of 2 days to reschedule. Mm-hmm. But what they'd said in advance for pool games, particularly if it had happened, say, in round one or in round two, all the scheduling would have been thrown out of sync, and, you know, that would have been a major problem as well. So it's a difficult one, but it's one when World Rugby decided to award the World Cup to Japan in the first place, it is an issue that they must have pondered over long and hard. As I say, they avoided a couple of bullets early on. We know when England arrived, they were stranded. This is about 3 or 4 weeks ago now, and there were other games threatened at various stages. But, you know, they got away with it. But it looks now as if, you know, it's the worst case scenario.
Well, it's one postponement away from the worst case scenario, because I suppose we could live with the games as mentioned, because it doesn't particularly change things apart from in the realm of hypothesis who'd have got injured and yada yada. I mean, New Zealand have won less game. Maybe they needed that game to test some of their 18 try scoring specialities against Italy. Maybe Conor O'Shea's happy. But back to the decision about Japan, I mean, that is a shame because everybody I speak to over there says it's been run like clockwork. The people are wonderful. It's been a massive positive experience for everyone. So maybe it wasn't the wrong country. It was the wrong time of the year. And then we go back to congestion in the rugby fixture list.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Certainly the stadia, the cities, everything about the tournament has been brilliant. Even though, you know, at the start, there was no obvious evidence that there was a World Cup happening here. But the atmosphere around the stadiums themselves, the Japanese who bought into the rugby, are obviously big rugby fans. But it's very noticeable now. I mean, just like RTE, they put in their television cover ratings. And apparently for the last two Japanese game, over 54% of the population of Japan have tuned in to watch them play.
And who's their Eddie O'Sullivan over there?
Well, they're... The Jamie Joseph of this world. Are you talking from a coaching or a punditry perspective?
Punditry point of view. I mean, obviously you
wouldn't
be able to
understand. I tell you, if you saw the studio scenes from their television, they're like three priests standing at the pulpit, all standing up. They give all their dissertations on the matches. Their faces never change. Obviously, we can't understand what they're saying, but it's quite phenomenal to watch. It's a bit. I remember years ago when T.G. Cahir and look. They continue to this day doing a brilliant coverage of the Pro 14. But I remember in the early days when it was the Magners League and T.G. Cahir were covering it, and Tommy Kiernan said to me one day, right at the start, he said, my God, he says, the guys in T.G. Cahir are doing a wonderful job. He says, I haven't a clue what they're talking about, but they're fantastic. So it's a
That's
bit the
kind
same
of audience we're all after.
Exactly. And it's a bit the same watching their pundits on the television, I have to say.
There is one scenario now, because we were working out the permutations during the week, and of course, Scotland, if the match is called off, they'll get their 2 points, and that would put them ahead of Ireland and True. If Ireland failed to pick up a single point against Samoa.
Yeah, well, if Ireland do that, they deserve to go home. So that's the bottom line there. But what about...
There is a scenario as well that if Ireland got a losing bonus point, so they lose to Samoa, but they get a losing bonus point, they then finish on the same number of points as Scotland, and Ireland would go ahead on the would go through on the head to head. There's so many different permutations. It's crazy.
The nightmare one is that everyone finishing on 15 and Scotland having a better points difference, which they do at the moment, and that means that if three finish on 15, it goes to points difference, putting Scotland through. But then it reverts back to head to head, which means Ireland would go home for having lost to Japan.
Oh yeah, I didn't think of that one actually. So if all three finish on 15.
And have beaten one another.
Have beaten one
goes
another.
Goes to points difference just to determine who's top. Okay. After that, the points difference, it goes back to head-to-head when you have two.
Crazy town. All right, Bernard, what's the story there? What are you making of all this?
Yeah, listen, I think it's important. There's probably a bit of scepticism in Ireland. We've had a few false scares around Storm. Storm Lorenzo last week didn't have the magnitude of damage that, you know, maybe is being forecasted, but just reading up about this typhoon, Hagibis, Typhoon Faxai, which happened earlier this year, caused 443 million worth of damage and three deaths. And this typhoon is forecast to be 2.5 times the size. So, I mean, realistically, the World Rugby mightn't have a choice to cancel Japan, Scotland if it hits with the same with the severity that's forecasted. And you know, people won't be able to go outside their house. So it's a really unfortunate. It's unprecedented for this time of year for a typhoon of this size. Obviously, it's typhoon season, but I think World Rugby are pretty unlucky as well that this is kind of going to happen this weekend. But hopefully, the games will get played. The Japan Scotland game, because that should be an unbelievable game if both teams play the style of rugby they've played so far. And you know, you'd love to see Ireland go through on merit and not down to a technicality. So hopefully we do our business on Saturday, and it's great to see, you know, the team Joe Schmidt's selected. It's a pretty strong team.
Yeah, let's come back to the team. Just finish on the typhoons. We can be pretty sure that whatever decisions they take in public safety are well thought through. The second thing is very unlucky World Rugby. I take your point. This is kind of super typhoon, and it isn't particularly expected at this time of year, so maybe that blows the argument out that they should have scheduled it at a different time of the year. So therefore we've no one to blame, and that really doesn't do the media any good, because we all want someone to blame. Who can we point the finger at? Come on,
World Rugby.
Right, Wes, World Rugby take the blame. Why?
It's typhoon season. Why on earth would you have a tournament during a typhoon season?
Because the rugby calendar is so chock-a-block otherwise.
Yeah, but they didn't have to give it to Japan.
Okay, I mean, so they shouldn't give it to Japan because it has typhoons? What kind of a weatherist are you?
I would have thought it's like utterly obvious that during a season,
your climate change,
when they have continuous major weather events, you don't host a major public event.
What about Qatar? So like in FIFA, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's not any or more right either, is it?
Yeah, well, we've seen what happens there. Okay, well, it's the World Rugby's fault, and that's where we're going to leave it, because we don't know what's happening. But from what Bernard said there...
Yeah, and Dara, sorry, just ahead, before we leave that, I mean, Wes is right. I mean, if the fallout of this is even greater than, you know, we've only tipped the iceberg. We don't know what's going to happen over the next few days. But I think World Rugby have left themselves open for all kinds of accusations. As I mentioned earlier, it is the worst case scenario for them, and you can be absolutely sure we won't have heard the end of it. But anyway.
Okay, I stand corrected. World Rugby are...
I don't think anyone's arguing that now that the event is here, in the interest of public safety, it shouldn't go ahead if there's 160 kilometre per hour winds. Fair enough. But there was always a strong possibility this was going to happen. They ploughed on regardless. Exactly. Why did they plough on regardless? Finances. Why ever? I mean, it's pretty simple. I don't think there's any ambiguity about who's to blame.
Well, there's loads of ambiguity, yeah. Wes, because if I was arguing on behalf of World Rugby, which I'm not, I would be pointing out, as Bernard indicated, that like historically, the typhoons that do hit Japan are of a certain magnitude, XYZ, and within the projected timescale of the tournament, which is where we are now, this wouldn't have had a material effect in the way that it does. I mean, that's their out.
Well, the last one, just, as Bernard said, was 443 million worth of damage and 6 deaths. So.
But that was at a different time of the year. That's the kind of typhoon when they expect stronger typhoons, Bernard. I don't know, we're meteorologists here.
Yeah, no, I think this is unprecedented for this time of year. Obviously, it's a risk. They obviously factored in that there was a risk worth going with, and now they're going to have to pay for the consequences of that, because the fallout...
Yeah, sorry, Bernard, correct me if I'm wrong. When you talk about, you know, the consequences of paying for the consequences, my understanding is that it's the host nation. They're the one, they get the gate receipts and the ticket sales from the World Cup. So World Rugby have their money up front. So therefore, the loss here is to Japan and, say, the Japanese Rugby Union and the government, not World Rugby. That is my understanding, anyway.
No, 100%. So Japan, obviously, they'll have insured against this, so the underwriters somewhere will pay for it. But they won't. The World Rugby won't lose out financially. You're guaranteed your revenue from World Cup is in. But they're going to pay for it in terms of collateral damage and credibility and, you know, the political storm. So, they certainly, there's no easy way out of this. This is a disaster. Even if Scotland and Japan goes ahead, like even the fact of the other games being cancelled and possible teams have more rest for the quarterfinal, it's just it's a nightmare situation for everybody.
We got an email during the week because we were on to World Rugby, and they said we have a robust contingency program in place in the event of adverse weather conditions, but the default policy was to cancel the games if they couldn't go ahead. So,
the games?
Yeah, or cancel any game that couldn't go ahead in the pool stages. But they have been quite quick to... I don't know how much they considered moving the New Zealand match or the England match once it had no consequence to an outcome in a pool. But the Japan match, as somebody said to me, the robust contingency plan included the Japan match going ahead.
But that goes back to what Dolan said. The participation agreement makes quite clear that pool matches are treated as one type of animal and knockouts are treated as a separate type of animal.
Yes, Dara. Logic would dictate this is still only Thursday night here in Japan. Mm. The Japanese game is scheduled for Sunday evening at 7:45 in the evening. So logically, you would think, you know, you could change the venue. Take all the scenario about, you know, ticketing and people who bought the tickets where they go. Even if you played it behind closed doors, you could change it to another venue.
Yeah.
But then I think you have the scenario where Italy are saying, well, look, we want to play another game of the World Cup. Why aren't we changing that one? You know,
Changes. I mean, there's robust contingency means changing 3 matches. And if that means behind closed doors, I could organise it.
Yeah, but they've one day less to do it now for the two games that were scheduled to go ahead on Saturday.
Okay. What's the headline from the team selection? It's, as expected, good news that Robbie Henshaw's back. Anything else grab you, Wes?
I suppose Tadhg Byrne and Larmour probably
team.
At 15.
Read the team out there just in case people are coming to us.
Healy, Best, Furlong, Henderson, Ryan, as you'd expect. Stander, Van der Fleer, Tadhg Byrne at 6. Stockdale, Larmour and Earls in the back 3. Aki, Henshaw, Sexton and Murray. So I suppose it says that they're still looking at a couple of permutations, or I don't know, do the lads think maybe this is what Joe thinks his strongest 15 is at this point? It's hard to see Rob Kearney being left out if that was the case. And Peter O'Mahony as well, I suppose.
Okay, just to you, Michael, quickly, what did you get in terms of injury lines, which okay. is about all you get about yeah. Rob Kearney and about
Rob Kearney
Reece
came
Roddick.
Off after 49 minutes of the Russian match with a groin complaint. And this morning, Joe said that he wasn't running freely at the start of the week, and the same with Reece Ruddock and Peter O'Mahony, who actually makes the bench.
Okay, all right. Let's start with Peter O'Mahony on the bench, because for the first time in his career, the mood is swinging in some way against Peter O'Mahony, not in a vicious way, but there's suggestions that the man cannot rediscover his top form in time, and we all hope he can. Donal, as a Cork man, I'm going to come to you first, because of course everyone gets a beating when Ireland aren't going well, but it's unusual for Peter to be in the crosshairs.
Yeah, it is. You know, it isn't that long ago since he was leading the Lions in a first test in New Zealand. But, you know, his form has suffered from injury. There's no doubt about that. He took a bang early in the game against Scotland, suffered from that. But, you see, he's been pressed into action in the last couple of games, due to all these injuries that they're picking up. But I think he is under pressure. There's no doubt about that. He was played at 7 in one of the games, in one of the warm-up games. We don't know whether that was with a view to playing him there if we were ending up playing South Africa in a quarter-final, because I think people like Reece Ruddock and Tadhg Byrne, on the basis of their performances in the World Cup, certainly deserve to have their names on the table for debate. The surprising one, I suppose, is that CJ Stander plays again. Reece Ruddock hasn't played a huge amount of minutes, albeit he played brilliantly against Russia. Jordy Murphy obviously wasn't fit to come into consideration again for this game. So, I mean, I think the back row selection has been compromised by the amount of minutes that certain players have played, and that is all as a consequence of injuries that we've picked up.
Bernard, yesterday I was great. I had a day off, which I spent watching rugby, which was just lovely, that triple header. But Scotland, of course it was Russia, but you could just see them click. You could just see some of the joy returning to them. They were playing pacey rugby. They were throwing out high-risk passes. I know the game was won, but they were fielding the passes. They weren't fumbling. The confidence just rushed through them again. That's what we need.
Yeah, no, but I think Scotland are always more likely to be able to put away a team like Russia in an easier manner, a more impressive manner than Ireland, because, you know, they do play that wide brand of rugby, and that's how you can pull away from tier two countries quite quickly. I still think they're going to struggle when they come up against someone who can, you know, dominate them physically, and also they're not going to be able to outrun Japan. So that game could be one of the games of the competition if it goes ahead, because both teams play a high tempo, a passing game. We're looking to get the ball to the edges of space, but I just wonder, do Scotland have the physicality to match up to Japan? We've focused a lot on Japan's attacking game, but when it's come to the collisions and the physicality, I mean, they haven't taken a backward step so far, and that could be the Achilles heel for Scotland, that, you know, they're not able to actually bully Japan, and potentially Japan can bully them.
Yeah, they beat us on points in that physical battle too, which so much of this World Cup is going to come down to. Donal, I know you've got to shoot off bullet speed, so we'll let you be, and looking forward to checking in with you on Saturday morning at 7:45 PM your time, 11:45 Irish, when you and Hugh will be in the Hackett and Amore Stadium for live coverage of Ireland Samoa. That's on RTE2 television. It's on 2FM as well, radio wise. Okay.
Thanks, Tara. Looking forward to the match, and as I say, at least we're thrilled all the Irish supporters that I've bumped into who've travelled so far. They're all delighted, at least, that their games are going ahead. I mean, just put yourself into the place of, there's a huge amount of English supporters apparently arriving out this weekend for the last pool game in the quarterfinals. So they're going into that storm in Tokyo and no match to look forward to. So at least we have a game. So look forward to talking to you on Saturday.
Okay, brilliant. Mind yourself. Get back to the game. So as Ireland Samoa, just as I was trying to make some sort of point about finding a little bit of confidence. And it did seem to be obvious to me yesterday that Scotland looked to be enjoying it. Just simple. I'm not saying that an enjoyable win against Samoa with six tries solves everything, but is it even necessary?
You'd imagine it's necessary to put in a positive performance that we're kind of leaving with a bit of a feel-good factor at this stage. I mean, we're possibly into the realm of where they're going to be written off if they don't perform great, and maybe there's one big gung-ho kickback as underdogs in the quarter-final, but we'd rather not go down that route. So if we want to stick as close to our pre-tournament hopes as possible, yeah, I think it's necessary we see a bit of form in this one for sure.
Did anyone watch South Africa-Canada there the other day?
Yep.
Yeah, what did this is my theory, and again, it's the drowning man grasping at straws, but I thought South Africa, physically imposing and impressive as they all were, they're big locomotive engines of players, and I thought that they were actually running on fumes towards the end. Now, obviously, it didn't really particularly matter. But is there a case, and I know they're only two or three starters, but is there a case that big engines can run out of puff?
Yeah, well, I think certainly if you look at the first game of that group between New Zealand and South Africa, there was definitely a feeling that both teams, for me, were punch drunk after 60 minutes. I do think, you know, the fact that so many of those players who played against Canada hadn't featured a huge amount in the competition so far would have affected them. But that's definitely the case. But like, if you look at Ireland, you can't say that we've looked fresh the last 20 minutes of games either. So,
sure.
If we were to play South Africa, you know, I know the Irish team pride themselves on their fitness levels, but it hasn't been evident so far that we could last them in a. Over an 80 minutes, and our fitness will come to the fore in the last 10. So it seems to be a case for all teams in the competition that unless you've got a really good bench who can come on and make an impact, the quality and intensity levels in that last 20 minutes has been dropping drastically.
Maybe running in 8 tries in the first 60 minutes takes it away.
Yeah, maybe it does. I know, but I'm just grasping at straws.
I think England have
said.
Probably looked the team most capable
complete.
Over 80.
Right.
In terms of maintaining freshness throughout the year.
Better than the All Blacks, do you think?
No, I don't think they've been better rugby-wise, but I think conditioning-wise they've looked
finished stronger.
Really good, in a really good place. And Japan, obviously, as well.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I do think it's... go on, sorry.
Just on that, Wesley, I think you're right. But if you look at England's tactics, they've kicked the ball more than anybody else. And, you know, they've been able to... Because they're kicking the ball away and playing territory and they have that power that teams can't play a lot of phases against them, they're probably not using as much energy as teams like us who just, you know, play one
phase after phase.
Phase after phase, yeah. So it's quite smart for Eddie Jones. Their tactical kicking is very, very smart and well implemented, and they're managing to save energy by actually not playing much with the ball.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it comes back, and this has been well flagged again, to Eddie Jones' experience, both as being of Japanese heritage himself and coaching and living there, seems to give him an edge when it comes to managing these conditions and this type of schedule, Wes.
I agree with Bernard. Their tactical kicking was very good, but I thought they, in the early stages at the weekend, I thought they avoided kicking a lot. Ben Youngs was taking a lot of quick taps. They were looking to play at a real tempo, which made their conditioning even more impressive. And you know, I suppose their opposition hasn't been phenomenal so far, and that's probably the biggest shame about not getting to see them against France this weekend. But
well, one tough game against Argentina, and that was kind of gone when the semi-off happened.
Yeah, the red card ruined it. But yeah, I think they look in a really good place to me. And like, I think New Zealand are better at beating anyone else than England are, if that makes sense. But I think the styles and the matchups in that game would give England a real chance of winning that.
Well,
I'd be quite confident
in
them, actually.
Final now, because they're going to top the group.
They're now going to play Australia.
Which actually isn't great if you're an English person historically. Because
no, I don't know. Is there much difference in Australia? Well, Wales are playing better, but I suppose in terms of psychologically, they're probably fairly similar matchups, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, is it an old trope that Australia, like, look at England and think, yeah, you know, you've got nothing? What, Bernard?
No, I think Australia would obviously fancy their chances of beating England, but he couldn't say on form that they will. I mean, bar one, you know, great game against New Zealand in the Rugby Championship, I think they've been pretty poor. The only thing for England was, obviously, there's not much between playing Australia or Wales, but England are going to run into New Zealand probably in a semi-final, which they probably would have liked to avoid that to a final. That they probably have the harder semi-final draw. But I think there's very little between Wales and England, Australia at the moment. The only thing is Wales' defence is probably better, and I think England would fancy themselves to be able to break down Australia you know, easier than they would a Welsh team who are looking pretty good without the ball.
Where do we want to wrap all this up? Because it's lovely talking about England form and all the rest. It would be nicer to talk about our own.
I think unless Ireland go out, the major talking point from the weekend is going to be what games go ahead and what didn't. And I suppose, you know, when you've had a lot of mismatches, when the bulk of the games are on the weekend, and when in this country they're on early morning, and Ireland haven't been going great, I suppose it's just another contributing factor to maybe the tournament not quite catching the wider public imagination here. And I suppose France and England particularly is one of those games, you know, that we look forward to seeing, that a tournament, I know there isn't necessarily a consequence in terms of qualification, but it's a big fixture. And everyone likes seeing the All Blacks as well, you know. So I think it's really, really taken from the tournament now at this point, I think, and on every level.
But it's changing by the hour.
Yeah, and, you know, let's hope it doesn't change with regards to our fixture yet.
And I know sometimes we're guilty of getting ahead of ourselves, so we might have a word about Samoa. I was talking to a guy who played sevens for Samoa, Henry Bryce. He's been over here since 2006, and he's played a lot of Leinster junior rugby with Naas, Old Bective, Setonians, Balbriggan, and a few others. And he did lament the state of the finances and the structure behind Samoa and all that, but he said they're hurting really bad, and this is a last chance to maybe guys looking for some sort of contract at the end of this, and that they are very pissed off at the way it has gone. So apart from the damage that they might do physically, that they really are determined to leave a mark on this, but I don't know if they're close enough in talent.
What's their major gripe? Is it against their own, or is it against crooked feeds?
Well, was that not a very crooked? That's the crookedest feed I've seen in a while. Sure, I know they're not pulled up on, but that is the crookedest I've seen in a while.
But like we talked about crooked feeds 5 years ago, and why does nobody police them? So, I mean,
I'd say it's a safe bet to put that there'll be cards or injuries if Ireland continue to play the same kind of close to the rock rugby against Samoa, against a fired up Samoa.
What's the alternative?
I think you're probably looking to move the point of contact a little bit more than they have been doing. I think we're all looking for that anyway, but whether it happens, I think evidence would point to the contrary.
Okay, so the weather has really threatened the legacy of this competition, but at the same time, there's nearly a month of rugby left if all goes well. Will Ireland be involved beyond Saturday? One would assume so.
Yeah, I mean, you'd imagine so. I mean, we beat Samoa and we're pretty much there. We beat them with a bonus point. We're definitely there. You'd have to think that's within our reach. I mean, Samoa are the kind of team, maybe unstructured in defence, that even if it's a close game, you could get four tries and still only win by 10 points or so. So, yeah, I think you'd be confident. And then you're kind of hoping that all that talk about tournaments starting now and all the rest of it applies to Ireland.
I think it's actually a performance and a four-try win that we need, because there's no point in limping over the line and then talking yourself up for a week before meeting South Africa at that stage, because it's really depending on a performance and getting some momentum, because they hammer the momentum thing. They can't just say, oh, we'll have it one-off, then we're back to the bad old days. We're trying to get up for a one-off.
Let's just leave on what Conor Murray said at the start of the podcast today, that he doesn't think that social media has any influence on the mood in the camp, and that they take absolutely no notice of it, and some of it filters through from parents.
Yeah, Jacob Stockdale was kind of saying the opposite a couple of weeks back, which I was surprised when I heard someone admitting that they do hear everything. Yeah, it's hard to know. Maybe it's down to the individual. I find it hard to believe that the Irish camp as a whole isn't cognizant of what's being said in the media and elsewhere, would be my feeling. But whether that filters through to the players, not so sure. Maybe it is an individual thing.
Is it some sort of self-discipline that they have to avoid reaching out for the phone?
Yeah, maybe it is.
Because there isn't a ban. Is pointless.
Maybe that's valid, though. You know, that you are kind of in that zone, so to speak. Each to their own. You know, some of them none of them actually seem to engage with it in terms of their own output during the tournament. So there probably is a ban to some degree on contributing, but whether that extends to reading other people's contributions, I'm not sure.
Okay, that's all we have for you this morning on the RTE Rugby World Cup podcast. A quick reminder again, we're on air on Saturday morning, RTE2, a kickoff at 11:45. Thanks to Wes and Michael, and thanks to Donald and Bernard and to Gary Moore for producing.